the upcoming weeks are very busy when it comes to developing the website and processes and, you know, building products and stuff like that. Because actually in January, we wanted to start with everything brand new. Mm-hmm. Don't think we will make that happen because it's just too much. But then somebody told me, who exactly told you you need to start in January with this?
I know. We put so much pressure on ourselves. I'll do that too. I'm like freaking out. My business partner is like, is someone pressuring you other than yourself? I'm like, no.
Exactly. I don't know what that is, but.
Did you have a nice birthday?
Oh yeah, I did. I mean, I didn't, I don't take vacation usually, but yeah, it was nice. My husband and my son, you know, they decorated the table and we ordered some food and just relaxed. And then and then somebody in my community, and I'm trying to hide my birthday. I don't know how they managed to, you know, get it. They posted it in the group and then, which is very nice. A lot of, you know, back and forth and communication work. But it was very nice. Very nice.
Good.
Ordnung trifft, dein Podcast für den Blick in die Welt der Ordnung.
All right, so let me quickly introduce again in German, because usually I jump into German and do the intro part. So herzlich willkommen zu Folge 33 von Ordnung trifft. Heute habe ich zu Gast die aktuelle Präsidentin der NAPO, die Mindy. Und heute tauchen wir ein bisschen doller als noch mit der Ellen und natürlich auch mit dem Barry ein bisschen stärker in das Thema USA und Evolution. So I just discussed with you the other day that there were different generations and, you know, different development stages in the US. And I talked to Ellen about it I would say at the starting point. And now I would like to discuss that with you a little bit in depth.
And yes. I quote,
by the way.
What's that?
I quoted you already, by the way.
Well, I can't take credit for this concept. This was when I first started in the profession in 2004. Mm-hmm. This was something that my boss at the time, her name is Catherine Lawrence. She's an organizer here in the U.S. She used to say, so we sort of developed the concept and built it out, but it's interesting to see all of the evolutions of the industry. So I would say first generation really are the early, early pioneers in organizing, like back in the late 80s, early 90s, who were defining what the profession is and really in the marketplace, helping to differentiate from an interior designer or a decorator or a house cleaner, you know, really getting clear on, you know, what's our segment of the market and educating the public about our role and the services that we can provide. So that was first generation. And
these guys were starting as part-time, I believe, or aside their main jobs, right? I mean, there was...
Yes. Or we had, founding members who had retired out of a previous profession, or who had been at home raising their families and then went into organizing and productivity as sort of their second chapter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense. I think that's what we said. Some of our colleagues here in Germany, they are at that stage, or in central Germany, let's call it this way, and sent at that stage. And then you also mentioned, you actually are in generation two already.
Oh, yes. I would say we're in generation three. Because generation two was when we started, we called it the superstar.
but that's what we have now in Germany. We have some like stars out there, but the general profession is not at a stage where people can, you know, live of it necessarily.
Right. So starting to see those pops where we have someone who has written a book or they are featured in a television show or now it's interesting because we're having a bit of a renaissance in with this model with social media influencers. So we see this where there's a specific person who is becoming known as an organizing or productivity professional in the marketplace. And that really was the second generation. So that's when I think public awareness really starts to take off. Mm-hmm. And that's where we were in the States, like early 2000s, like right mm-hmm. around the turn of the century is when everything really started to spike, where we had very well-known authors like Barbara mm-hmm. Hemphill and Julie Morgenstern and Harold Taylor. So I think that that has helped propel a lot of the public awareness about just the services of organizing. But that was second generation.
And you started to understand what organizing is around that time as well?
I did. So my story is a very common one. I was in a different career path. I was in a different profession. And I started watching HGTV, and it had featured organizing television shows. Okay. And I had never heard of organizing. I didn't know it existed. And as soon as I saw these professionals from, again, second generation, who are featured on the television shows that were popular at that time here in the States, were Mission Organization, Clean Sweep, Clean House. There's a whole handful of them. And that's when I realized, like a lightning bolt, like this is what I should be doing. This is really the best use of my skills and my previous mm-hmm. training and my passion. Mm-hmm. And that's when I joined the profession in 2004.
Which I find extremely interesting, because you are one of the people that didn't start self-employed, but directly in a company.
That's right. So I actually define myself as sort of the very cutting edge of third generation.
Okay.
We start seeing multi-person businesses. So yeah. Whether that's partnerships that have come together and are working in tandem as a collaboration, or a business owner or owners that are then employing organizing professionals. So I started mm-hmm. out in 2004 as an employee of another organizing firm. And that was very rare at the time.
Exactly. How did you find that job in the first place?
I just did an internet search. I did an internet search and I found two professionals that were working in my area. Uh-huh. And I asked them both out to coffee met the woman who would become my boss, my employer. And we just clicked. She felt like she was at a stage in her business where her hours were full and the phone was still ringing. So she had to make a decision. Okay, am I going to start turning away clients and prospects, or am I going to, build my business and get more bench strength? Mm-hmm. And luckily I just arrived at the perfect timing and we decided to make a go of it, but it was very experimental.
You were employee number one.
I was employee number one. In fact, I remember, I always talk about this when I do trainings with NAPO professionals, is I did 3 days in like a trial period, which basically means that I was organizing with her with real clients and not getting paid. I would not recommend it.
Yeah. But somehow they need to test as well if your skills actually, and also your work ethics and your, personality fits to the company, right?
Sure, absolutely. And I understand now that when you have an applicant who thinks that they want to be an organizer because they are organized, right? Or they apply organizing skills in their own space. There really is a leap between someone who is inherently organized and someone who can organize professionally. Mm. Because when you organize professionally, you have to be able to transcend the clutter. You have to be able to function in a highly cluttered environment and transform it. And I find that a lot of times people who gravitate to organizing because they like organization dislike that feeling of being in a cluttered environment, but which of course, when we do our work, it's not tidy and organized until we walk out the door.
I have that. I have that with private places. I cannot function very well in privately cluttered places because that, I don't know, those categories and the way of work, how they work at home, that's not what I'm interested in. Whereas when I go into B2B areas, that's exactly what I like because, you know, I know exactly how that works and how they think and how the processes go. And I think this is exactly what you have to ask yourself as well, right? What are your clients? Or am I really good with working with the customer? Or am I just good working with myself?
Yes. Well, and I find that, and this was absolutely true for me when I first started out, but when you're starting out in a new career and you're excited, you've got a lot of enthusiasm for it, you'll pretty much take on, you know, almost any opportunity that comes your way, especially if you're just building your business as a new entrepreneur. It's like, I just need to keep the lights on. Like anything that someone will, you know, write me a check to do, I'm going to try it. And so that's very common.
Yeah.
What happens, I believe, over time is as we gain experience, as we gain knowledge, as we develop our skills, as we get to experience different types of clients, different types of projects, we really start to winnow down and hopefully, you know, begin to work in an area that is a perfect fit for our skills and our personality. Yeah. But that doesn't come on day one. You really do have to try out a bunch of different settings, different client types, and figure out what works best for you. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, it was much harder to figure out or to reflect on what I was gravitating to versus it was easier to figure out what I did not like. So just what you're describing, you know, you get that pit in your stomach, you wake up in the morning and you're just dreading the day versus walking out at the end of the day and feeling energized and feeling fulfilled and feeling like you did meaningful work. You know, paying attention to those moments, I think then helps you develop that specialty area.
And when do you think, because you then talk about the third generation where you bring in people into your company, when do you think an organizer is at that stage where it makes sense to bring in people maybe to cooperate with? I mean, that's the first stage, I believe, but then also to hire those, because we are right at that part where some companies think about hiring because they have more than they can take on, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that it's interesting to watch everyone's different path. You know, I've been a member and past leader of in NAPO, we have the multi-person business special interest group. Yeah. So I actually talk to a large cross-section of multi-person business owners here in the US. And that first hire is always such a leap of faith, you know? And there can be a lot of different ways to do that. You know, for me, when we started, I founded my business. So after I was an employee of another company for about 6 years, in 2010, I broke away and I founded my business, Abundance Organizing, with two co-founders. And we met each other and became friends and really started to be able to understand each other's work ethic in our volunteer connection through our association. So we were already sort of operating with a basic understanding of, you know, do we have the same vision for what our company could be? Do we have the same work ethic? But we were all organizing in the field already. So we didn't need to hire another organizer right off the bat. We had a lot of bench strength for the in-the-field, hands-on work. What we did need was someone who could help us with the administrative side. So that was our first hire. And we were only about 6 months in after founding our company, was someone who could answer the phones, who could talk to prospects, who could help us with bill paying, accounts receivable, you know, just doing some of that back office work.
So you can focus actually on delivery, because that's what you do in the very beginning, is that what your strength is to deliver to the client.
Yes. And you hit the nail on the head. It really has more to do with your strengths and then thinking about where you want to, what lane you'd like to stay in. And then you look at hiring to supplement and support in the areas that you feel like you could let go of. Mm-hmm. I think organizers, as a stereotype, but as also a kernel of truth, like to control. So the hardest thing to do often is just to let go and step back and allow someone else to find their way in your business. Yes. I think that's often the biggest hurdle.
Micromanagement. Yeah. But yes. You need to let go. I mean, you get onto a point where you feel it's getting too much. So you either let go or you get overwhelmed, and then
yes,
doesn't help.
Yes. And we, for years now, my business partner and I go through an exercise every year at the end of the year as part of our next year planning. We make a list of every single task that we're spending time on during mm-hmm. the week that relates to the business. And she does her list, I do my list. And then we come together and we audit for overlap. Are we both spending time on the same task? Could we differentiate and really start to silo? And then we think about what are the most important tasks that we are spending our time on, or more importantly, I think, what would be high value to our business that we're constantly bumping because we're in the weeds with operational tasks or day-to-day work. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we've then taken those lists after workshopping it and created job descriptions for, like, this is the next person we need to hire because I need to get all of this off my plate. And so we then kind of package the responsibilities, create a job description, and that's how we've built our team for many years.
Wow. And how many employees do you have now?
We have 18 employees in my company.
That's a lot. That's like the dream scenario for our industry here, for sure.
So what are you seeing there? Are people starting to partner up? I think that's yep. also kind of early stage. You start to see people are taking on either more work than they can handle on their own or bigger projects, and they yes. just need more hands. Are you already seeing that?
Yeah. So especially since 2 weeks ago, we had our first summit like you have in April. I can see, especially now as they met in person, they follow up a lot. And you can see that on Instagram, you know, these people are talking. These people are talking. We have the first like smaller corporations, smaller organizers coming together. They are giving each other, you know, clients and projects and stuff like that. And we have also three companies that now, they are the front runners, and then they have organizers in the back, but freelance, where they also, you know, distribute mm-hmm. in a structured way. So that is the more mature level, I would say, we have right now. I don't know if they really have, maybe there's one company that has also an employee, like really mm-hmm. hired, but in Germany, it's not as easy as it is in the US to kind of hire and fire. If you really have an employee, then it's something very serious, and you need to be very aware of what you have in, you know, in the pipeline when it comes to customers mm-hmm. and stuff like that. We are rather a company or a culture, I would say, you know, having an accounting company and a virtual assistant, but they all work more or less freelance. I think this is more the stage mm-hmm. where we are right now, but we are getting there. Because especially mm-hmm. the B2B market, I realized just now, and the paper clutter digitalization kind of area, they grow like big time. And we need a lot of more people there. And I think in that, you know, with this development, we will have also the next generation that you mentioned is find a job in organizing, right?
Yes. Right, exactly. So after you have the growth of multi-person businesses, it's sort of mm-hmm. the natural result is you start to have job seekers. So we're there now. That's where we are now here in the States, where you can find an advertisement for a job and you can apply as a candidate for okay. a job posting in organizing and productivity. We have people who have on LinkedIn, they're using specific search terms. And anytime a job in organizing pops up, they're alerted. That's actually how one of my most recent employees came to us, is that we did a posting and she just, you know, was anything that was posted with organizing in the title, she would get an alert. And so that's how she found us.
Wow. And you know, in your company, what are you focusing on? What is your your target clients and what are your services that you offer?
We're like 90% residential work. We do anything in the home from general decluttering to senior downsizing. We work with a lot of clients who have executive function, so ADHD diagnosis. And we do a lot of unpack and organize after moves or reload after renovation. Those are our big, big, big revenue areas.
I think especially that, you know, unpack after moving thing is something that is totally not in our market yet. And we should, because how stressful is moving?
Exactly. Exactly. When people are worrying, you know, running around, trying to learn their new neighborhood, find new resources, the last thing that it seems they want to do is deal with boxes. And it's really challenging for a lot of our clients who crave organization. That's another sort of factor or criteria of organizing that people don't really understand on the outside looking in, is that we work with a lot of clients who are highly organized. They are accustomed to having systems that work. And what happens during a move is everything, it's like thrown up in the air and then it comes down in a different format.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, not everybody is able to manage that.
Exactly. So that, to what I've observed, is that for our most organized clients, that is more stressful than someone who always struggles with disorganization and sort of is accustomed to that low grade of chaos in their home. So those are the clients that really, really value our team coming in. And from the very beginning, you know, they've purchased this beautiful new space to live. And we get everything unpacked out of boxes, but we get them settled in so that everything is functional and tidy and it looks great from day one.
Okay. I think for sure this is something that we definitely need to build awareness in this society. That makes sense. What about all that paper clutter and also, you know, making everything digital available? Is that also something where you say, you know, more companies focus in this focus area?
Yes. And I would say digital organizing is a really growing trend right now in the US. For many, many years, we were focused on paper organizing if we were doing residential work.
Yeah.
And now we have organizers who actually, there's an organizer serving on the NAPO board with me right now, who he specializes in digital organizing.
Yeah.
So helping people with the files on their computer, helping them, you know, sort through their digital information. That's a really growing area. And it's the same thing really with photos. You know, as soon as we all started carrying around iPhones and we have these digital photos, I mean, it's almost like the photos just go over a cliff. And I mean, it's astounding. You know, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos in people's homes up until, you know, the year 2002. And then all of a sudden there are no more photos. They're all on the computer.
And what are you doing with that? That's a very, very, we have the first photo organizer in Germany now.
Oh, fantastic.
But you know, one compared to, this is like a thing in the US to just focus on photos.
Yes.
Wow.
It is.
Yeah, but it.
And there, so there, you know, we, our team can do jobs with photos, like physical photos, organizing them. Those jobs are really labor intensive. They take a long time and they tend to be more emotional, which makes sense. Yeah. It's much more emotional looking at memories and photos than your pantry, say. And then the, there's another different silo of photo organizing, which is digitizing someone's photos. Yeah. So we have companies where in the US you can mail a box full of just disorganized photos and the company will take it. They will scan everything in, put it into computer files and then send them back digitally.
Wow. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because
it's great to have a company like that in your back pocket for someone like me, because that's, we don't do the digital piece. We don't have that equipment. I mean, it's really a very specialized field. So that's another thing that I'd be very excited about for you all and with your organization and the fact that you just had your first summit, understanding and learning how we're all different and what the nuances are between our businesses really helps the whole profession grow, because you start to understand that you can't, you know, and it goes back to what I said about, you know, that when you first start, your business plan is whatever someone's going to pay me a check to do.
Exactly.
And then you specialize and it gets narrower and narrower. And once you realize and have grounded confidence in what is your sweet spot, understanding all the professionals around you and what they can do and how that's different from you, then you start to have a really robust network of, if a client comes into me and they're not the right fit for my service area, I know exactly which colleague I can send them to. So the client gets the help they need. We're passing business around within the organization. We're lifting the profession because we're making sure that every client is working with the specific professional that is the best fit for their needs. It just makes us all look better. Yeah. But that's where I think you really start to see growth across the industry. And it sounds like that's what you're building right now.
Exactly. That's what the summit helped with. I mean, you see the people on Instagram or Facebook, you know, on all these different platforms, but talking to them, you also understand their motivation and their vision. And they all have visions where they want to develop themselves into. We have a lot of generalists still, but you can see the tendency where they will go.
Yes.
And I feel there's one, because I just had that experience the other day. There's one, and I would like to know how is that in the US? There's, especially as you are in residential areas, a lot of, I would say 50 plus, 60 plus men and women that are not in digital jobs. They have a phone, they have an iPad, or, you know, they have a laptop. They have all different like technical IT architectures because they didn't know better. They just bought. They have like 5 different email addresses. They have 1,000 documents somewhere. They don't even understand the structure and the connection between all the, you know, devices. But then I have a question. So that is actually the point where, you know, consultants go, you know, and work maybe with them. And I know that in Austria, the consulting industry actually was not very amused about the organizing industry, you know, going into that direction. So how is that in the US?
So consultants, meaning productivity consultants, is that?
Or IT or architecture or, you know, these kind of things. Maybe also productivity. I mean, time management, those people as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's quite a lot of other jobs that are connected to the organizing industry. And where do you say, okay, we are now reaching into an area of other people as well, or other jobs and fields as well?
Mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of overlap, and productivity and time management specifically is actually a growth area for organizing. So we see a lot of professionals come into organizing new, and they start with residential work and then they evolve and grow. And as they specialize, they start moving into more productivity. And then you get into business consulting, workflow, you know, executive coaching. They're all sort of branches and offshoots of organizing. So what NAPO has tried to do is to create an umbrella that covers and supports both organizing and productivity because there is so much crossover.
Yeah.
Now for us here, when you start getting into tech, that's a whole different specialty. There are organizers who specialize in working with technology.
Okay.
I'm not one of them, but dealing with like the actual devices is a real specialized knowledge. Okay. And that you see in a lot of different fields. So it, you know, the client could end up working with a variety of different professionals depending on their needs.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That would be interesting. You know, where do you say this is still also the NAPO area where we say these people we would like to cover, and that's outside of the umbrella of NAPO.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we have actually the last stage that you mentioned, the fifth generation, which would be the
fifth generation.
Yeah, the educational track.
Correct. So fifth generation, and we are not there yet here in the United States, would be higher education recognizing, so in university recognizing organizing as a career path and an educational path. So you could go to university and get a degree in organizing. And right now I used to say all the time that this doesn't exist. And I was corrected a few years ago by a young woman who learned about the organizing profession, wanted to do this work, was in school at the time. And she worked with a educational advisor and basically created and crafted her own degree program. So aside from someone who's really intrepid like that, we don't have schools sort of offering this track in the educational world. But we find that we do have younger people who are starting to realize that's the career that they aspire to. So they're crafting together, you know, they're taking classes in psychology and small business and business administration, marketing, communication, and they're cobbling together the training and the skill sets that are going to serve them in this work. But what my hope is that the next generation will start to see higher education offering organizing as a degree path.
I mean, with business administration, I mean, there you learn everything that you need in order to run a business. And then it would be maybe interesting to just have maybe like focus groups like organizing methodologies and that NAPO could develop and then maybe go together with a university. So you have the business part and then you have the organizing part. That would be interesting.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's fascinating, you know, to see so many, I said my story was very common. So many of us in the US have come into organizing and productivity from a previous career. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to talk to a cross-section of professionals and hear what they were doing before and how they were applying their organizing skills. Okay. Because even on just on my team, we've got a former paralegal, a former graphic designer, a makeup artist. You know, we have so many. I was in retail for many, many years. So it's just a nurse. We have a former nurse. So I think that has added that variety and sort of varied experiences have really led to such a rich tapestry in the professional community here in the States, because everyone's bringing with them that knowledge base, that experience, and then applying it to this organizing profession. Okay. And I think the organizers who are really, really successful from day one are able to stitch together the story so that that makes sense to their clients.
Yeah.
When I train organizers, I work with a lot of new or even aspiring, you know, prospective organizers. And we talk about, you know, just because it's your first day wearing the mantle of a professional organizer, it doesn't mean that you're a rookie and you have nothing to offer, right? You've got this rich history of experiences. You have these amazing journey that you've been on, and being able to represent that story in a way that all of the steps that you've taken, you've been applying your organizing skills, and that makes sense now in the new work that you're doing as a professional.
Yeah. That's a very interesting point, because do you see organizing as a more of a second career?
It used to be
a third or a fourth.
But I think that sixth generation, ahead now. I project that sixth generation, we will have individuals who go through college, they get a degree in organizing, they come out of college, and it is their very first job out of college is working in our field.
But
and we're very, very close to that. Okay. I have a member on my team who she spent a couple of years abroad first, but we were her first job out of college. And she's been with us for 11 years.
That's amazing. That's really, really cool. And then now, I mean, so obvious. We talked about it in our first call. Now talking about the next code. Yeah. I talked to Barry about this too and with Alan. And they're like, don't get me started.
Yes. It's really, I mean, doing anything, I'm sure it's the same where you are, but anything where you're getting into governmental systems is just really an exercise in frustration. But yes, we have our sights in Napo. We have our sights set on going through the application process and working to get a NAICS code for organizing and productivity professionals. And once we have that, I believe that there will be so much more structure that's available to a business owner in this field. Right now, in particular, insurance is especially complicated because we don't have that very clear standard definition that's recognized by other organizations and by the government. So even though you could ask 50 people what a professional organizer is, and they know, but until we have that official stamp of approval from the government, it's very complicated to get insurance in particular.
Yeah. Okay. We are lucky that for us, it's still possible that the insurance topic is not that connected. And we are trying to still figure out to make everything official in Germany. And I can only talk about Germany because all the other countries, they have maybe different systems in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
I will talk to Francesca as well. Let's see in Italy how that goes with these guys.
Oh, yes. I coached an organizer in Canada, and she it was fascinating to me because she was able to provide services to a client in collaboration with a mental health counselor, and everyone's services were being paid for by that client's health insurance. And so she was in our coaching, she was sort of sharing with me some of the methodologies and the reporting standards that she and protocols that she had to follow because she was applying for these insurance payments. But that is unheard of here in the States, that an organizer would be able to have their services paid for by an insurer. So it's things like that, I think, that will really move the needle once we can get that NAICS code.
Okay. You said, so 2014, you tried, and then 2020, because of COVID, didn't, you know, really work out. But then in 2026 is next time.
Correct. Yes. Okay. So we're already talking about it and planning for it now.
Okay. Well, it's government, so a preparation time of three years is not that bad. Okay. So by the way, there's one word I'm using quite a lot these days is wobbies. Wobbies, you said, right?
Wobbies? Oh, wobby. Work hobby. I got that from Ellen. I cannot take credit for that. I learned that from Ellen.
But I like that. Like a work hobby. So you mainly, I believe, see that when, like in early stages, or do you have a lot of organizers who say, it's a work hobby for me?
I would say we have a lot of that in the States, and there's really been a shift. The younger generations that are coming into the profession are very entrepreneurial. I think because of the explosive growth of tech companies, there's just a confidence level in our younger generations. When they're coming into the workforce, they're thinking, I want to start my own thing. So you start to see, like, side hustle is really a popular term here in the States, where I've got my regular full-time job, but then also I'm trying to launch and start my own company as an entrepreneur in my off time. That's very, very common. Uh-huh. So I think we're seeing a real shift from the norm when I started was that you were typically, it was your second career and you were a secondary income for your household. Okay. So you had a primary earner that usually was your partner. And then in this field, this was just supplemental revenue. Now we are, and I was again, like being an employee was considered just wildly new and futuristic at the time. But I was also, I was single. I lived alone. I had a house with mortgage payments. So I was really supporting myself with this work. And that was another sort of uncommon scenario at that time. But now it's very exciting to me because we have all these fresh, energetic, really future thinking professionals who are coming in who want to be entrepreneurs. They are building businesses that are sustainable. They're supporting themselves with the revenue that they're making through this work. Yeah. And they're not relying on a partner or someone else to be providing for them. Yeah, and so that to me also is like a kind of a trend that we're seeing in the profession as a whole. But that's going to also elevate because with the expectation that you can come into this profession, you can do this work, you can make good money and you can support yourself. I believe we're going to start attracting a lot more investors, private equity, people who want to come in and see an organizing profession or company as a money-making opportunity.
Yeah.
That's not something we've had for a very, very long time.
Yeah. And at that stage, we are right now because almost everyone I talk to, the reason number one entering this profession was not to make money, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, helping people and, you know, following your personal passion and stuff like that. The only person who told me last time was Barry. He's like, I did enter that profession to make money. And of course, you want to make money out of that. The challenge that I feel a lot of people have here is, so I want to do good and I have like that big vision of helping people. But then on the other side, how can I earn money from that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that feeling?
Oh, yes. We hear that a lot.
Okay. How do you deal with that?
I also think that this is a secondary variable with the multi-person businesses because for so many years, if you wanted to be an organizing professional, your only option was to start your own business and hang a shingle and say, I'm here, I'm doing this professionally, hire me. Well, now that we're in these sort of, you know, more evolved generations, you can just be an organizer. And so that's the person that I want to talk to every day, all day, because that's who we hire in my business. So they've got the skills, they love the work, they love the clients, the variety every day, and they don't want to be an entrepreneur.
Okay.
Right. So that person, 10 years, even maybe 5 years, there were not a lot of opportunities for that person. Well, now there are. I mean, I can think of just here, I'm in Virginia in not a small city, but like a medium-sized city here in Virginia. And I can think of four companies right off the top of my head that would hire someone who wants to be an organizer. So now we're able to really divide, you know, do you crave and want to be an entrepreneur? Do you have that entrepreneurial spirit? Or do you just want a job being an organizer? They can be two separate things. Okay. And that's a good thing because then we don't have people who just really want to give themselves an opportunity to do this work, having to be an entrepreneur when that's not their skill set or their passion.
Yeah.
It's a very different skill set.
And how do you overcome that? I cannot take too much money out of what I love so much and how I'm helping people.
That is really a mindset issue. And, you know, somebody like Ellen with her coaching skill, I mean, that's when I start to hear those type of scripts, I'm thinking there's a coach out there for you that could help change your mindset. And again, like, when you come in and you're young and you're hungry and you're living independently and this is the only option, you are really hustling. I mean, you are committed to making money, right? So, and a rising tide floats all boats. So having these successful entrepreneurs is going to help everybody else. Yeah. But see, I think even just getting together in your community and having those conversations and allowing someone who has always been a little sheepish about taking money for what, you know, what they have to offer, either they don't feel like they're worth it or they feel like that's predatory in some way. You know, they just want to be altruistic and provide these skills and services. When that person starts to see someone else who's giving the same value to their clients, who enjoys their work just as much, and they're bringing home a healthy paycheck, that starts to open up the possibilities.
Okay.
And you really start to have a different way of thinking about it.
I like that you say, you know, when you have successful entrepreneurs and companies out there, then it's also good for society, you know, because you're paying taxes and you're, you know, you're hiring people. And that is also very valuable to society. I like that. That is a good argument.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's for a company like mine, like I have 17 other people that I help them provide for their families and themselves. And that's an important responsibility that I think about every single day. And I'm very proud of that. Yeah. So it's not only the services and the amazing work that we provide to our clients that's so meaningful. We really change people's lives. But it's also then kind of the secondary benefit of feeling like we're doing good things in our community. And it's not just for my employees, but also we get together once a quarter and we do a project in our community for a charitable organization that might need our help. So we've organized donation centers. We've organized, you know, filing systems in administrative offices. We've done, you know, drives. We're doing an event towards the holidays that's in tandem with Container Store and a local charity where we're wrapping gifts for clients that come by for a donation for this organization. So we're starting to get really creative with other ways that we can give back to our community, be visible and in our community and be seen as a contributing, you know, business entity in our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. So then my last question would be, you know, now a lot about Central Europe and how we are doing and thriving. What would you say in our state? What kind of advice would you give?
I encourage you to continue to connect with each other. There are so many opportunities when you start talking with other people who are doing this work, especially when you first start, but throughout your journey, it just expands your ideas of what's possible. It gives you new perspectives. It gives you new goals to set. And it can be really inspiring to hear how other people are succeeding in this work, what kind of opportunities they're pursuing. I look back on my career path in 18 years of doing this work, and NABO has been such an integral part of my success because I've always had that support, that inspiration, that encouragement, that learning, you know, classes and just conversations can really lead to great successes in your business at every stage in your evolution. So that's my biggest recommendation is that, you know, to work together, to come together, to reach out to each other, to form, you know, small groups where you can really zero in and focus in on specific types of services or specific types of businesses. That's going to elevate everyone.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Because maybe to wrap that up, we are offering 4 different levels of connection in the next upcoming year. So the first one is we have a WhatsApp group where everybody can join. People who are interested or on the way of, you know, getting their business on the road or already are very successful. So that's just a big group. Then the second one is regional groups. So we have like in the north or Bavaria, Munich, you know, these regional groups to that they connect. That just recently started in the last couple of weeks. And then 2 that are offered to our members, which is 1 is focus areas, a little bit like you have in NAPO as well. Let's see which ones really hit off next year. We don't know yet. I mean, we will discuss with everybody who is entering as a member. And then the 4th level is the maturity level of each business. So we have the beginners, those who need to get into the world in the first place and make their education, their experiences and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Then the 2nd level is already, you know, we have a regular income, we have a certain maturity, but it could get better and, you know, that kind of stuff. But these guys already feel they want to connect to people that are on their own level.
Yes.
Or even those they can look up to. And then you have the professionals that already live off that work. They have a good shop maybe, or they have an online product, or they have like big clients or even B2B or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they even, they are thinking now, maybe I want to hire, maybe I want to, you know, I want to get to that next level. So we are going to connect on different levels, I would say.
So that's smart. What we
provide next.
Yes, it's so smart the way you've organized it. And then, so because you always want to connect with sort of your peer group.
Yeah.
And then also having these opportunities for in-person connection. I tell organizers all the time, you know, I offer mentoring. I'm, you know, a paid executive coach for other organizers. And I have an hourly rate. So if you want to pick my brain, that I'm available to hire. But when I go to a conference, I am there to learn, to connect, to talk to anyone who crosses my path. Yeah. So if you sit next to me at the dinner table and you want to ask me questions for an hour, that is something I would love to do. Just as part of the experience of being at conference, I think the spirit of these gatherings, when people come together, there's a spirit of generosity that is a give and take, right? Yeah. So that is also just such, you know, anything you have to pay in terms of fees to attend an in-person event is worth every penny.
Yeah.
Because it is a game changer in terms of just being able to access and connect with not just people on your level, but people on all different levels. And I would say as someone who's been doing this 18 years, I constantly am energized by meeting someone who's just brand new. They're in their first 8 months of business. They're wide-eyed. They're excited. They've got such energy and enthusiasm. I mean, that's a benefit for me of employing organizers, is that I have that kind of energy coming into my business all the time.
Yeah.
And it really, it lights me up too, you know, to talk to someone who's at that early stage of growth and to talk to them about their vision. So there's benefits on both sides.
And you always find a person who is doing something maybe also a little bit different that you can learn from. It's not just the newbies bringing in fresh air, but also, you know, you have entrepreneurs from different areas, and then you want to go and write a book and you talk to an author maybe.
Right? Yep, exactly.
So connection it is.
Congratulations on what you did.
Thank you. Really, and we're learning a lot from you guys. I mean, I mean, there's a lot of markets that are on the go of growing. But I think a lot of people are looking into the US because you are quite mature market for sure.
Yes.
Cool. Then thank you very much, Mindy. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. This has been such a treat.
Das war's auch schon für heute. Danke, dass du dabei warst. Wir freuen uns auf die nächste geordnete Runde mit dir. Happy Days, deine Verena.